Ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues, if you are ready, we are going to start. Do you hear anything? No. That's a good beginning. We'll try this one. Yes. Now, if I use this one? No. Okay.
Switch that off. No, let's switch it off again, and we turn up the volume here.
Now, we're going to turn up the volume. No way. And if I speak like that, how is it?
You should move closer.
Hein? Ça marche dans les oreilles. Ok. Bon. Magique. And now, do you hear me? Good. Now put your glasses on and the movie is going to begin. Ok. So, we are going to start this session about the state of political science in Europe after Bologna. And I'm very happy to chair this conference with Suzanne Schultemeyer. Who is Suzanne? Suzanne is the head of ECPSA, the European Confederation of Political Science Associations. It was created in 2007 in Berlin, and it brings together now 23 associations of political science in Europe. And their idea is, at a time of increasing harmonization of the European higher education space landscape, to think together about the future of the discipline, its academic development, its professional organization. So that's the reason why Suzanne, with our French representative in ECPSA, Didier Georgakakis on my right, have decided to focus this session on the effect, the impact of the Bologna process on teaching, on careers, on mobility, on autonomy of disciplines, on fragmentations of disciplines. It is actually changing quickly the academic landscape for our discipline. And for that, Suzanne will present you the different participants, but we have, as a French expert, Didier Georgakakis, as a German expert, Suzanne, and then we have from Finland, Erki Bernson, from Lithuania, Sharunas Lieksi, and from Romania, Luciana Gica, and the five of you are going to give us a mapping of European political science today. And the fact that we hold the conference here in the European Parliament, that's definitely a symbol, a message. It's a particularly appropriate place for such a topic. And I would like to thank warmly Stephanie Kunz, the Secretary General of the European Parliament. Without her, this would not have been possible. But before we start at the heart of the matter, I would like to say a few words about Peter Mayer. Peter Mayer, our colleague, died suddenly 15 days ago. He was just 60 years old. He was a great scholar. He was a specialist of party politics, of comparative politics, of democracy and representativeness. He was Irish. He started his studies in Dublin. Then he held position all over Europe, moving to Leiden, then to the European University Institute of Florence, where presently he held the chair, the prestigious chair of comparative politics and government. And not only was he an outstanding academic, he also was a very wonderful person, full of charm and humor, and we are going to miss him very much. He was, for his students in particular, the exact opposite of what we call in France, I haven't found the good translation in English, a mandarin. He was the exact opposite. His door was always open to his students, and for all of us, it's a great loss. We miss him. And this session, in a way, I'll dedicate to him. And now, Suzanne, we can attack political science in Europe after Bologna.
Thank you very much, Nana. I think the overarching question of this afternoon should be, has political science become a European discipline? We all know that we have cooperated since long. There are many individuals who kept up excellent relations, who work together. There are also departments which work together across the borders of Europe. But it is really only since the late 1990s that efforts were increased to bring the discipline together in a more systematic way and under a much wider perspective. Although the launching of the Bologna process was not the sole driving force, it certainly enhanced these efforts. It gave them a specific meaning, if not even to say urgency. And an institutional response was the foundation of the European Confederation of Political Science Associations. Nana addressed that already briefly, and I won't take too much time now to explain in further detail the genesis, the development of that very young foundation. If you so wish, we can do that afterwards in the discussion. At this time, I think it should suffice to say that we thought that as the European higher education landscape was to be harmonized by the Bologna process, we felt the need for an organization which can promote the discipline's interests and pursue its professional goals. We know that there is a very fine, very successful research cooperation institution or organization, the ECPR. We have tried to develop further and closer cooperation through EPSnet with mixed results and mixed success. But there is a gap in between these kind of topical-oriented associations, and that is something where the issues of the discipline can be discussed without direct research interests, without specialized interests on a field of political science. So meanwhile, I'm proud to say that it's more than 23. We have almost 30, meanwhile, associations that declared that they want to be a member of ECPSA, so that we more or less encompass all European countries where sizable associations exist. We try to establish this ECPSA as a forum for debating the common issues of political science and as a broader framework for cooperation. We were very delighted when the French colleague suggested earlier this year that we bring together a panel here at their annual conference. So today we can use this occasion to take stock. A dozen years of the Bologna process, what has this meant for political science? Can we observe integration? Have we developed a common understanding of the contents and of the scope of our discipline? Has Europeanization helped to define our borders and thus become institutionalized? Or has Bologna created practical processes and pressures which enhance diversification or even erosion? When job chances and economic considerations become the driving force of shaping university degrees, when much is asked under the heading of usefulness, it may well be envisaged that a certain kind of specialization takes place and specific areas of political science win priority and others lose out. What looks like the opposite development at first glance, the growing interdisciplinarity, may in fact lead to the same result, the blurring of a clear profile of political science. These issues touch the core of our discipline. They are closely related and have a strong bearing on how we teach political science, which seems the more practical question, the more tangible question. And the teaching of political science, indeed, and I think we have all experienced that in one role or the other, the teaching of political science has changed drastically in many European countries, at least on the continent of Europe. This in turn, of course, has enormous consequences for the shape of departments, for recruitment strategies, for demands on faculty, and I could go on listing such issues, questions, problems for a long, long while. Now, how did we take on all these challenges? Did our reaction bring us closer together? Did it really lead to harmonization? What role do fears play? Fears that we lose a kind of national identity as a discipline in this process. Or autonomy? Or simply, but very grave, our languages? Before I turn the floor over to our speakers here on the panel, who will report on all this in further detail and comment on these issues from various perspectives, I would again like to thank very, very much the French Association for hosting us, and especially Nana, of course, the President, and Didier Georgiakakis, the member of the Executive Committee of ECPSA, with whom I planned our session. I would now like to give the floor first to Didier, and then afterwards it will be Luciana and Sharunas. Luciana is from Romania, the University of Bucharest, and each one will in turn say a little more about himself or herself when it's her or his turn. Sharunas is from Lithuania. Then we have Erki from the University of Helsinki in Finland. And now is Didier's turn to give us some more ideas on the issue of this afternoon.
Ok, merci, Suzanne. Donc, je parlerai pour ma part en français. Je vais simplement, dans cette brève communication, donner un peu l'idée générale de ce panel. L'idée, c'est, d'une certaine manière, d'essayer de commencer une sorte de discussion collective entre nous, sur effectivement la construction de l'espace européen de l'enseignement supérieur et de la recherche dans le domaine de la science politique. Donc sur quel type d'effet ça a, mais poser cette discussion moins en termes académiques distanciés, ce qui est plutôt notre savoir-faire ordinaire, qu'en termes politiques. D'une certaine manière, quelle est notre vision de ce processus? Qu'est-ce qu'on a envie de faire ensemble? Et aussi, d'une certaine manière, quelle est notre vision pour essayer de nous donner les moyens, collectivement, de reprendre la main sur ce processus qui, je vais y revenir, nous échappe en fait assez largement. Donc, pour poser les termes du débat, je vais faire en fait deux constats et puis, par la suite, je poserai quelques questions. Premier constat, c'est déjà qu'il y a, on le sait, mais c'est une base de la discussion, il y a un gouffre entre, d'un côté, le discours sur l'intégration européenne ou un modèle européen, précisément, de nos disciplines. Ce qui vaut pour la science politique vaut d'ailleurs aussi pour les sciences humaines et sociales, me semble-t-il, en général, et plus largement. Donc il y a un gouffre entre d'un côté une vision assez claire de ce que pourraient être les objectifs précisément de la construction européenne en la matière, et de l'autre ce qui se passe, et ce qui est la réalité finalement matérielle de nos disciplines en Europe. D'abord, on observe que le mouvement n'est pas commun. Le processus de Bologne existe, on y reviendra, mais dans certains pays, et notamment c'est le cas de l'Espagne, on est passé de master qui était en 5 ans à des masters à 4 ans, en même temps que les autres pays précisément passaient de master de 4 ans à 5 ans. Cette réalité-là, la question de la masterisation en Grande-Bretagne, a un sens assez différent. La plupart d'entre vous connaissent des collègues britanniques, pour lesquels la question de la cinquième année reste encore quelque chose de tout à fait lointain. Le mouvement n'est pas complètement européen, mais il s'agit d'un mouvement plus général d'internationalisation. Si on s'interroge un peu sur ce qui fait le crédit scientifique, précisément des uns et des autres dans leur collaboration à l'étranger, on s'aperçoit depuis une quinzaine d'années, ça a toujours été le cas auparavant, mais il y a un accroissement très très fort du poids des universités américaines, en particulier dans le cursus honorum des collègues européens. Très bien par ailleurs, c'est pas un problème en soi. Mais ça veut dire que c'est une réalité qui n'est pas, contrairement à la représentation précisément qu'on peut avoir, européenne stricto sensu. Il y a un lien très très fort, disons, dans un schéma évidemment plus vaste. Les disciplines, par ailleurs, ne sont pas les mêmes et elles sont extrêmement différentes. C'est toute une des difficultés du travail au sein de la Confédération, c'est que nos réalités sont très très différentes. Dans certains pays, c'est d'une certaine manière quelques dizaines de collègues. Dans d'autres, c'est plusieurs milliers. Leur poids, leur force sociale, leur prestige éventuellement, ou leur relation au monde politique est aussi extrêmement différent d'un pays à l'autre. Les diplômes sont différents. Vous savez bien, alors là, en France, on est un petit peu particulier, puisqu'effectivement, notre présence de la science politique dans le niveau bachelor est quasiment absente. Il y a quelques expériences qui existent, mais il est très très faible par rapport à ce qu'est la réalité de nos collègues. En revanche, le modèle des instituts d'études politiques, où se fait une partie substantielle de la production de l'enseignement et de la production de la recherche, et un modèle qui est un peu décalé, pluridisciplinaire, etc., par rapport à ce que connaissent les facultés de sciences politiques dans les autres pays. Donc nous ne parlons pas toujours précisément de la même chose. Nos frontières internes sont différentes. Dans certains pays, le public administration est une partie substantielle de la discipline. Dans d'autres, non, c'est une discipline indépendante. Dans certains pays, les relations internationales sont une partie constitutive. Dans d'autres, non. C'est encore un système complètement différent. Et donc, bien évidemment, aussi, dans nos luttes académiques, puisque ça nous occupe généralement un peu, on voit bien que les frontières ou les luttes ne se jouent pas au même endroit. En Grande-Bretagne, la question de la relation au droit et au droit public en particulier, qui nous préoccupe beaucoup chez les Français, les Italiens et les Espagnols, est complètement absente. Leur problème, c'est plutôt la relation aux économistes ou à certains juristes de droit privé. Du coup, les choses sont ici assez différentes. Second constat, donc une très très grande diversité dans la réalité. Second constat, c'est que ce processus se joue en grande partie sans nous. Alors évidemment, on peut dire du point de vue du processus européen, la communauté savante est représentée. Elle est représentée, mais elle est représentée par des instances qui, d'une certaine manière, sont un peu l'élite de la gouvernance universitaire, on dirait aujourd'hui, donc la conférence des recteurs, etc. Mais finalement, les disciplines en tant que telles, et notamment les disciplines en sciences humaines et sociales et en sciences politiques, ont un accès à ce qui s'opère dans les institutions européennes qui est assez faible. En définitive, qui est même très faible. Ce n'est pas le cas sur l'aspect de la recherche, proprement dit, et sur la question des politiques, précisément, d'éducation supérieure, notre représentation ici est faible. L'association, vous le savez, a répondu au livre vert de la Commission européenne sur le futur de la politique recherche. Je dois vous dire, à titre de témoignage, on voulait faire masse avec d'autres associations équivalentes, précisément dans les disciplines, dans les autres disciplines des sciences humaines. C'était très difficile de trouver des partenaires organisés, etc. La fragmentation est la règle en la matière, et tout particulièrement dans le paysage SHS. C'est vrai au niveau national, c'est démultiplié évidemment au niveau européen. Alors on ne demande pas de force pour autant. Les députés européens qui siègent ici ont été formés pour beaucoup, précisément par nos collègues ici et ailleurs en sciences politiques, proviennent de ces formations. Mais je dirais que le relais entre les instances représentatives et la manière dont se produit cette politique, pour l'instant, en tout cas, il est extrêmement faible. Alors, dans ce contexte, je pense que effectivement, nous avons une forte légitimité, ou je pense qu'il y a un intérêt effectivement à intervenir, et ce d'autant plus que le paysage, comme nous savons tous, a considérablement changé ces 10 dernières années, à la fois sous l'effet du processus de Bologne. Je pense que c'est effectivement un point important, mais sous l'effet plus général de la reconfiguration des budgets de la recherche, je veux dire, dans les États membres. C'est-à-dire, d'une certaine manière, d'un côté, le programme cadre de recherche et développement augmente, c'est la seule partie du budget européen là, qui augmente, donc il a pris 30% de plus, ce qui, a priori, est une bonne nouvelle, mais ça se fait dans une division du travail où on assiste de plus en plus à des tentatives, en tout cas, de retrait des États membres dans leur propre politique nationale à l'égard de la recherche et singulièrement à l'égard des sciences humaines et sociales. Et le bruit qui a couru, et qui n'est pas qu'un bruit d'ailleurs, de la possible disparition des SHS faisant partie des challenges, si vous voulez, donc des grandes priorités du PCRD, cette possible disparition est inquiétante. Même si on peut penser que pour cette fois-ci encore, les choses vont être, grosso modo, sauvées. Je pense que l'un des rôles de l'association, c'est de réfléchir aussi ensemble, ce qu'a déjà souligné Suzanne, sur les problèmes importants que pose l'intégration, si vous voulez, de nos disciplines au niveau européen. Évidemment, d'un point de vue général, je pense qu'on est à peu près tous d'accord, c'est plutôt une ressource. Il y a un intérêt majeur à le faire sur la base d'objectifs ou d'ambitions scientifiques. Malgré tout, il ne faut pas se voiler la face, et d'une certaine manière, on peut dire que ce processus, d'une certaine manière, n'est pas toujours ou ne va pas toujours dans le sens d'un enrichissement mutuel. Il faut d'abord rappeler, et après savoir qu'avons-nous à proposer en ce sens, mais vous le savez bien, le processus d'internationalisation est un processus qui a un coût, qui est terrible, que ceux qui participent précisément connaissent bien et que ceux qui participent moins connaissent bien aussi, précisément par défaut, parce qu'on peut penser que s'ils ne font pas, c'est qu'il y a des raisons. Et donc c'est un coût à la fois financier, et on sait que dans une conjoncture où les laboratoires n'ont plus de fonds récurrents et où on coupe des postes un peu partout, précisément en Europe, nous nous trouvons dans une sorte d'injonction contradictoire. D'un côté, être plus internationaux, donc bouger plus et demander plus de moyens pour le faire, et de l'autre côté, évidemment, des coupes budgétaires. Ce n'est pas simplement d'ailleurs un problème en termes de coûts seulement financiers, c'est aussi un coût en termes de travail. Ça suppose une conversion, ça suppose de changer son registre de référence, ça suppose d'expliquer les choses sans doute différemment et un peu en dehors, comme nous le savons, de nos propres présupposés, nos manières de faire, si vous voulez, implicites dans le cadre de communautés scientifiques qui ont changé. Donc toute une série de débats qui nous animent beaucoup dans la communauté nationale n'ont absolument aucun sens dans la communauté internationale. Et ça veut dire que pour garder le fond, c'est un travail, parce qu'il ne s'agit pas de jeter le bébé avec l'eau du bain, bien au contraire, pour garder le fond de ce que nous avons à dire, ça suppose donc un travail de remise en forme fondamentale. Nous le savons, mais je pense qu'il faut en discuter entre nous, mettre ça sur la table, et l'idée qui voudrait que le processus d'internationalisation soit un processus naturel, advenu, etc., est sans doute la pire des choses si, précisément, nous voulons subsister en tant qu'intellectuels. Deuxième idée à dire, ou deuxième question ici, c'est que cette internationalisation fait courir le risque, comme l'a dit Suzanne, d'une sorte d'harmonisation mal maîtrisée. On le voit très bien, on assiste grosso modo à un phénomène plutôt de concentration. Le nombre des éditeurs, précisément, qui deviennent aujourd'hui les éditeurs incontournables pour publier internationalement, sont très peu nombreux. Quatre ou cinq maisons d'édition, toutes anglo-américaines. Donc avec un format, avec des présupposés, avec des objectifs dans la relation au marché, qui est à peu près définie entre elles et qui ne varie pas beaucoup, finalement, d'une maison à l'autre. Ça ne veut pas dire qu'il n'y a pas des collections où la diversité est possible, etc., mais le format en lui-même se restreint considérablement par rapport à ce que nous pouvions connaître, en tout cas par le passé. Donc toutes ces questions de classement de revues, etc., telles qu'elles se posent au niveau international, je pense que nous avons des positions à affirmer sur ces questions-là. La question de la diversité linguistique, évidemment, elle est un problème partout. Partout, dans certains pays, nous disent nos collègues, il est de plus en plus difficile d'enseigner dans sa langue. C'est évidemment un problème. En matière de recherche, la valorisation nécessaire, sans doute, de critères internationaux fait que beaucoup de doctorants, dans beaucoup de pays, commencent à penser que ça ne vaut plus nécessairement la peine de publier dans sa langue. Et qu'à la limite, il vaut mieux précisément un article passé dans une revue en langue anglaise et par la moulinette du format qui va avec qu'un papier publié, y compris dans la revue nationale de sa discipline. D'ailleurs, qui n'existe pas partout. Donc là, c'est évidemment un problème, et ce, d'autant que, évidemment, il y a le danger d'un formatage intellectuel de ces questions autour, finalement, des modèles les plus positivistes. Il faut savoir ici que nos collègues, notamment américains et britanniques, se plaignent énormément de ce danger. Ce n'est pas une diatribe contre la domination anglo-saxonne, etc. Ce n'est pas du tout le cas. C'est un modèle imposé avec des moyens massifs, mais qui met aussi nos collègues anglais et américains en porte-à-faux. Ceux qui étaient au Council for European Studies il n'y a pas très longtemps, Michel Lamont, par exemple, disait très très bien qu'elle revient en France et en Europe plus généralement, parce que c'est ici, aujourd'hui, qu'on refait de la sociologie politique, dans un moment où, précisément, la sociologie politique a plutôt été marginalisée tendanciellement aux États-Unis, lors même qu'elle est aux fondations, a priori, de notre discipline. Donc, ici, je ne veux pas être beaucoup plus long. Suzanne l'a dit tout à l'heure aussi. Le processus européen est fondamentalement ambigu. D'un côté, on assiste à une forme de revalorisation des universités dans le paysage. C'est vrai, et on le voit un peu partout, d'une certaine manière. Mais dans le même temps qu'on a une forme de revalorisation des universités ou d'un ensemble de critères d'excellence, on a l'imposition, précisément, de formats, alors que nous connaissons tout particulièrement en France en ce moment, mais la plupart des autres pays sont passés à cette même moulinette, où l'enjeu de la question, c'est évidemment la question de la relation de l'université à l'économie. Et l'université, certes, est plus forte, mais dans une définition qui a extrêmement changé par rapport à ce que nous pouvions connaître, et tout ça s'incarne dans des instruments qui, précisément, sont extrêmement puissants et avec lesquels les uns et les autres, nous devons aujourd'hui avoir affaire. Là encore, il ne s'agit pas de déplorer la situation. Ça, on peut le faire, mais ça ne nous apportera pas grand-chose. C'est simplement de poser la chose et de dire, voilà, comment collectivement, d'abord, qu'est-ce que nous en pensons et ensuite, précisément, qu'est-ce que nous avons à proposer pour essayer de rester maître du processus, ce serait sans doute prétentieux, mais en tout cas pas complètement exclu, comme nous le sommes aujourd'hui, avec des tas de risques à la clé d'une université à deux ou plusieurs vitesses, comme vous le savez. Donc pour conclure là-dessus, je dirais simplement que je pense que l'association a un rôle à jouer, et cette confédération a un rôle à jouer en tant qu'aiguillon, parmi d'autres, avec d'autres, mais c'est vrai que dans sa nature, par rapport à d'autres associations européennes, elle représente, je dirais, la base matérielle des disciplines. Ce sont les associations nationales. Donc, par définition, elle représente tout le monde, et pas seulement ceux qui sont déjà très engagés, les plus investis dans ce processus d'internationalisation. Parce qu'évidemment, si on pose la question du point de vue de ceux qui sont déjà dans le jeu, la question ne se pose pas vraiment. Il faut la poser à un autre niveau, autrement elle n'a pas de sens. Donc cette association-là, je pense, a un rôle à jouer, et Suzanne éventuellement reviendra dans vos questions sur la politique plus générale qu'elle entend développer, notamment par la mise en place d'un ensemble d'études, de pointues, etc., au moins pour essayer de faire le point. Et puis, Le deuxième outil, dans un premier temps, j'espère qu'on pourra faire mieux aussi, c'est pas seulement d'intervenir à Bruxelles quand il y en a besoin, ou ailleurs d'ailleurs, à Strasbourg, auprès du Conseil de l'Europe, sans doute, qui a une voix au chapitre sur ces choses, c'est aussi d'essayer d'avoir une meilleure connaissance de ce que nous sommes. Parce que l'argument de l'international est toujours utilisé pour faire advenir des réformes quand nous savons précisément que non, ça ne se passe pas nécessairement comme ça chez les voisins. Et je pense que ne serait-ce qu'avoir déjà cet argument d'une vision très très claire de quelle est la réalité et quel est notre objectif commun par ailleurs pourrait aider à faire bouger les choses. D'où l'idée assez simple de ce panel, précisément, de commencer un peu par un tour de piste avec différents représentants précisément de ces associations. Voilà, merci de votre attention.
I'm going just to not sum up what you said, because that would be very difficult, but give some points for the colleagues who don't speak French to see what Didier just said. Yes, but if you want, I can just say it very quickly. The idea is that there's quite a gap between the European model of integration and what's actually taking place in our different countries. We are very different. Political science is different from one country to another. The LMD process is very different from one country to another. We are sometimes more American than European in the influences. And the process is going on without us. In a way, are we really controlling what's going on in the post-Bologna process? As far as the money is concerned, certainly not. And the very idea of internationalization, it's a very nice aim. What does it exactly mean? There is a growing concentration of publishers' reviews. It's more and more difficult. It has a cost, internationalization, and we are not all ready to pay for that cost. It's also decreasing the linguistic diversity. Is it still worth teaching political science in one own language? Is it still worth publishing in one own language? That's something we may ask. And there's a kind of uniformization going on in Europe, which is not necessarily a good thing. So in order to master the process better, the idea is first to count on our national associations grouped together in that ECPSA, because they represent our discipline in its diversity, and also try to know ourselves better, and that's exactly to see what is political science in our different countries. That's exactly what we're going to try and do today.
Thank you, Nana.
Merci pour l'invitation à l'association française et aussi à la Confédération européenne. Didier m'a demandé à parler en français et aussi en anglais. Je vais essayer. I think I will... and I hope I will manage to make them both at the same time. When Suzanne asked us about this panel, she asked us several questions. And I will try to answer those and then to come on with some reflections on what is going on in Eastern and Central Europe and with the specific case of Romania where I'm coming from. I'm located at the University of Bucharest. I'm an international relations scholar, but I feel myself as a political scientist, also as a social scientist. I have several identities. I'm the third generation of scholars that are trying to set for the third time, we hope a third time we'll be luckier, a national organization of political science in Romania. With that, I will just go to the questions, because I think this is the content and not just the captatio benevolentia. One of the first questions was, has political science become more diversified or disintegrated due to interdisciplinarity or diverse BA MA programs? Est-ce que les Sciences Po ou la Sciences Po a été, est devenue plus diversifiée à cause de la diversité des programmes de licence de master? In the case of Romania, I would say not so much. And in the case of the other countries that I know in the region, Hungary, Serbia and Bulgaria, also not so much. There is there are increasingly diverse programs, but there are some institutional challenges that limit the interdisciplinarity and the diversification of the BA/MA programs, especially having dual degrees, dual diplomas with other institutions, even in one's own country. That's a very problematic issue. And when it comes to dual European degrees, or triple, or whatever, it's also a huge problem. We have this problem, including with Erasmus agreements, when we try to use the Erasmus agreements for financing such dual programs, because the diplomas are not recognized. Je vais essayer de faire un résumé de ça. Non, on n'a pas une discipline plus diverse à cause des programmes de licence ou de master plus diverses, parce qu'on n'a pas des programmes plus diverses à cause des restreintes institutionnelles. C'est très difficile d'avoir, même dans son pays même, des programmes interdisciplinaires ou des diplômes en partenariat avec d'autres institutions. Et en ce qui concerne les diplômes européens, en Sciences Po, c'est toujours très, très difficile, y compris en ce qui concerne les accords Erasmus. Another question which seems to be very important for many of us is whether there is an independence of political science from other disciplines that are very much related, or whether there is some competition between political science and other strong areas, topics of historical, canonical interest, like public administration and international relations. And again, I think it's not necessarily a problem in our case, although there are some variations across the regions. When it comes to public administrations, due to a tradition within the communist regime of having separate administration teaching, we have created political sciences in many cases, and Romania is a good example, as opposing this type of teaching and this type of scientific investigation. So from the very beginning, political science was perceived as a more theoretical, more intellectual, more elite-driven activity, whereas public administration was limited to the old guys, old communist guys. We retrieve it back at some point, but in many cases it happened that they separated again in the late 1990s due to, unfortunately, personal reasons. They were just very strong personalities in charge with the development of the faculties, and they said, we don't need the public administration. They are intellectually not worth it. But financially, actually, they are attracting much more people. So it was a very bad choice, financially wise. When it comes to IR, the question is not actually asked like that. IR was developed within the political science department, and we don't seek, I'm an IR scholar, we don't seek independence, because the type of tradition of IR thinking is more comparative in content, and not regional studies, or it doesn't have the same tradition as in the US as separate departments. We had the continental tradition, we might say, but at the same time, we are not accustomed with the American canon of international relations, which is, I think, an interesting case. Maintenant, pour la version française, le résumé est que non. En ce qui concerne l'indépendance des disciplines, on n'a pas vraiment une compétition, mais il y a des cas où, comme en Roumanie avec l'administration publique et les Sciences Po, cette situation, nous avons créé la Sciences Po indépendante, libre, démocratique, en opposition avec l'administration publique qui était l'enseignement politique d'État pendant le régime communiste. En ce qui concerne les relations internationales comme discipline autonome, il n'y a pas pour le moment, bien que nous soyons un peu plus proche du canon américain des relations internationales, surtout en ce qui concerne la théorie, en ce qui concerne la tradition institutionnelle, nous percevons les relations internationales comme quelque chose de politico-comparé avec un objet différent. Donc, c'est plutôt institutionnellement la discipline des relations internationales fait partie du champ des Sciences Po, donc aussi des départements de Sciences Po, et nous n'essayons pas d'être indépendantes comme institution, comme département ou faculté. Now, a question that is very interesting for the French speaking audience, the autonomy of the political science from law, especially constitution and public law. I don't think this is a question, and we agree here on that. As I told you, the traditions were a little bit different in establishing political science, and although we have a lot of influence of international relations and international law, research, they are influencing a lot each other. We are not thinking about international law or law in general as a competitor of political science. On the contrary, the consolidation of political science departments won a lot from law scholars, because initially it was created with the help of social scientists, some of them also coming from humanities. So the law scholars actually helped, in some cases, the autonomy of the political science department. Donc pour l'audience de langue française, et j'ai participé dans une section dans cette conférence sur cette question. Et je me rappelle que c'était quelque chose de très important, la relation entre le droit et la tension avec les sujets de droit et l'autonomisation institutionnelle face au droit, au surtout droit constitutionnel, ne s'oppose pas dans l'Europe centrale et orientale. Et en Roumanie, certainement non. Par contre, au contraire, dans le cas de Roumanie, par exemple, les collègues qui sont venus du droit ont contribué à la consolidation des départements de Sciences Po qui ont été originellement créés par des moins de sociologues, mais plutôt des gens qui venaient des lettres, des gens de lettres, des littérati plutôt, et aussi souvent des mathématiciens. I forgot to tell this in English, but we also had a lot of hard scientists in establishing the departments of political sciences. Now, finally, the last question that Susanne asked was about the role of the vernaculars as science languages. Are our languages threatened as science languages in these countries? Of course, we have the pressure to publish in foreign languages, and I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, Latin was a scientific language, and this did not really threaten the scientific object of the other languages, if you really had to say something in that language. French then became very important also for scientific reasons, and now English. So it's not such a big problem. This is how we perceive it. If you have something to say and you have an audience, it doesn't matter the language. Yes, and it's important to also say it in several languages because not only more people will understand, but it gives you another framework of thinking, which is very important. And this is what we emphasize a lot in this younger environments of political science. Pour nous, la question de la langue n'est pas tellement importante parce que si on a une audience et on a quelque chose à dire, n'importe pas la langue, et la langue, savoir plusieurs et exprimer des choses scientifiques dans plusieurs langues est important pour avoir des perspectives différentes. Maintenant, quelque chose très, très spécifique à la langue française et à la situation roumaine. Le premier département de Sciences Po en Roumanie a été établi par un consortium de langues françaises. Et la première faculté de Sciences Po a été une faculté qui s'appelait Faculté internationale de sciences humaines, qui était modelée sur un IEP. Et les premières politistes étaient de langue française. Donc, les profs qui sont maintenant les plus puissants en ce qui concerne la valeur intellectuelle sont le produit de cette génération-là. Et maintenant, on a la pression anglaise du canon institutionnel de publier dans des bases de données internationales, surtout Thomson Reuters, ici. Qui veut dire publier en anglais. Et une bonne partie de mes collègues ont ce problème très important. Qu'est-ce qu'on fait et pourquoi nous qui publions assez en roumain ou en français, nous n'avons pas le CV qui est pour l'avancement aussi pour reconnaître ce que nous faisons. Et maintenant, on a une sorte de débat sur l'importance de la langue dans ce contexte. Le deuxième département ou faculté créé en Roumanie, celle de Cluj-Colojvar, a été établi dès le début avec l'aide du département américain d'État, et avec de l'argent américain et avec un curriculum américain. Et de ce point de vue, dès le début, ils ont eu les principes et les avantages d'avoir le canon américain. Et maintenant, lorsqu'ils doivent présenter leur publication, ils sont très, très, très sympas. Mais eux-mêmes disent que ça c'est un peu moche parce que en effet ce n'est pas un seul standard qui doit être là-bas. Il va falloir comprendre et négocier un standard pour des variations. Donc ce n'est pas la langue mais la variation des projets intellectuels qui doit être tenu en compte. Some specific issues related to the area that I'm trying to report on a little bit. And there are just three things that I want you to get from here. The first one is the relation between teaching and researching. The second is about institutional challenges and the access to resources. And the third one is about canon formation, about the discipline. And all of this, of course, in the context of the Bologna process. And also, another thing that is important within the Bologna process, and we don't take into account, is the context. We should pay attention to the context. And right now, we have a context which is the economic crisis, which has an impact also a lot on our disciplines as well. In our case, we have a pressure not necessary on new programs or creating other research programs, but rather at the entry level. The Bologna process basically demanded from all the faculties, irrespective of the field, to lower their standards in admitting students. This was a very bad thing. And also, due to the crisis, we don't have... we are left with very few good professors in the secondary education. And we get increasingly worse students due to that. And also, a lot of our colleagues in the tertiary education are defecting. In the specific case of Romania, our income as university professors, you know it from last year, dropped with more than 50% due to the economic crisis, because we are public servants. And in the case of the public servants, there was a 25% cut in the income. And then for the professors that have an extra percentage for being for being in the university for more than several years, and also for having a PhD, you got some 15 plus 15. So actually, we were dropped more than 50%. In some disciplines, we are very bad off. In IR, for instance, in my department, which is the leading one in IR in Romania, we are just three people teaching. Now one of my colleagues got pregnant, and the other is having a sabbatical. So I'm
here.
And I thankfully we're starting on the 1st of October. So I will have to teach basically all the classes, undergraduate and graduate classes, on IR.
For half your salary.
For half of my salary, of course. And also we cannot employ, because all the jobs in public administration have been stopped. We cannot employ, we cannot advance. This puts a lot of pressure, especially within the Bologna context, for the third year, third year BA students, which are left often without guidance for their thesis. And the third year becomes just a very loose type of academic endeavor, which is very bad from this respect. Another thing, we have a lot of brain drain. A lot of students are going for an equally good education in this part of Europe, in this part of the world. And instead of coming back and teaching or using their knowledge in our context, they just go abroad and want a career abroad. Of course, there is an economic crisis abroad as well, and they cannot get it. So there is a lot of frustration, and we have a huge amount, a layer of unemployed, well-prepared, but unattached scholars or potential scholars. Also, another problem that we have is that institutionally wise, we don't have a differentiation between professors and researchers. We are assumed to have to do research and teaching on the same half salary at the same time. So August, which is mandatory holiday, should be actually our research period. So it's quite tough, and we are trying now to differentiate some of the of these issues. And one of the purposes of the goals of the association that I'm representing, and we're trying to really create, third time lucky we hope, is actually to transform ourselves from a purely scholarly association to a professional one. We should defend our profession more than the discipline. The content is there. We are internationalized enough to fight for our academic debates. But for the profession, we are not. We don't have the tools for the moment. And this is what we're trying to do. Do you need that I translate that in French? Or thank you. It's already very tiring. Second thing, about institutional challenges and access to resources. There are basically two path that a scholar can have in order to advance in academia, in our environment. It's either coming from abroad with already a good CV, or staying in Romania and being close to a mandarin, no? And unfortunately, most of the PhD students are around a mandarin. They are not going abroad. So we are not producing very good internationalized scholars. And also this creates a lot of frustration and also has an impact, of course, on the quality of research. Now we have, last year there was a new law of education that has a lot of pluses and also a lot of minuses. The big minus is the political involvement. For the first time, after we won pure academic freedom in our universities, after the fall of the communist regime, the rectors of the university will be appointed politically by the minister. Not only that, by the deans also are appointed directly by the rectors. So basically, if you read the law politically, it's basically direct involvement of the political sphere in the appointment of the administrative staff. On the other hand, the law wants to make the rector and the dean position as administrative position. There is an economic perspective. And this perspective, however, is not fully internalized. So many will profit and already profited about that just to go directly on appointing deans on specific issues. And the political science departments are very vulnerable at that at this moment. So we have that. On the other hand, we have in the law the request for transparent, clear, well-defined principles for advancing and for being recognized as a scholar. We had to have as many publications of this quality and so on, which is for the first time very clear and transparent. You're no longer at the hand of another scholar. And I can tell you my own very small story about that, when I was the only candidate for advancing on a higher position, and I got and basically it's like a council, a faculty council appoints a specific commission that examines on the content, and then the council just say whether the things were right. And in my case, of course, everything was all right, but they voted 5-4, 5 against and 1 abstain. And in order to be to go, you have to have a majority of plus. So that was a very strange situation when it was not a majority of pluses. And to discover, to my surprise, that the 5 were actually 1 plus 4, one that had a quarrel with the chief of my department. And also, as I discovered later, that person also had his son in my class, and I failed his son several times, and I didn't know, and even if I knew, it was difficult to anyway, so the thing is that in such cases you don't have much choice, or until now you didn't have much choice. Even those that were blatantly against such things was saying you don't have any institutional thing. You just wait, go to the next one, and that's it. So for the protection of your rights as advancement was nothing. For the moment, we do have the criteria. But the criteria are so up, as I was telling you earlier, that actually none of the professors that are now in the position of full professor fulfills them. So actually, by setting the content of the standards, none can advance. It will be interesting to see what will happen in the next years. We hope that this might mean an input for diaspora, because like the diaspora, I'll call it, will have more thing. A final point on the access to resources. So far, unfortunately, it was the research that was following the grant. So you found a grant, you just thought about a proposal. It was not your research that was trying to be financed, but because nobody was interested in your research. You just had to adapt your research to a grant. Now we're trying to have open competition with clear criteria. It was the first year, this academic year, that is just ending in September, and the next will start in October for us, that we have clear competition and very, very clear criteria, and where we're hoping that the results will be also fine. But canon formation also, it's very interesting that frequently it got through personal fields and just for personal reasons. The way the European studies formed in Romania, for instance, is very hilarious. A member of a party, I won't give the names of the parties, wanted to go back to academia, but he was a former communist scholar who didn't have much background, and in political science, none. So he wasn't in political science, but he wanted to get somewhere there. So the ministry thought about the innovative label of European Studies and International Relations as a specific discipline, just to give that person the opportunity to have the, a chair in that. So this is how we got it. So sometimes canon formation is not so much related to an intellectual debate about a concept, but also about personal thoughts. And thank you for a very long intervention.
Thank you very much, Luciana. Sharunas, will you be the next?
Sorry for not speaking French, but I think it will make my talk, generally my intervention, it will make shorter, you know, generally. I would like to start from structural things. Basically, we start Bologna process in 1999. For the majority of universities, for the majority of people who are working in management of the universities, and I'm working at the management of a university here because I forgot, you know, to introduce myself right now. I would like just shortly to mention that I am professor and the dean of political science and diplomacy faculty at Vytautas Magnus University, and this faculty for political science is the largest in the country. Naturally, you know that the country is not large, however, we are the largest in the small place. So basically, to go back on my previous thought, we have a situation where for the majority it's two-tier or three-tier educational system coming with Bologna. Basically, it's American system, plus transferable credits. So when we're talking about Lithuanian example, the whole country was in Bologna process already in 1993. So we had the system introduced very soon after independence. In 1993, all universities were already geared towards the American system. My own university, which is modeled upon American model of liberal arts college, the system was introduced already in 1990. So the formal requirements were never a problem. The problem was different developments that followed Bologna. First, in 1990, the same year when Bologna process starts, we have enormous jump in the number of the students. How was this achieved? First, professional bachelor's degree, those who are striving to get the professional bachelor's degree, they were automatically included into the number of university students. They were never part of university education. So all this academic establishment, we were very unhappy about the whole thing and the very fact. Actually, in many countries, they are part of this third level of the first level of education. It's basically equivalent of American associate degree. And so for the very fact increased the number of students for one third immediately. Then, from 2003 till 2007, the number of first-degree holders doubled in the country, apart from the fact that all people who were striving to get the first associate degree, basically as a professional bachelor's degree, they were included into the first level of education. Plus to that, the number of the students increased. At the same time, we had an enormous, very troubling tendency that the number of the finances that is provided for one student was decreasing constantly. Constantly was decreasing, and the state subsidies for one student were equal at the university level at social sciences, and which is the very fact is important for us because we're talking about political science, was equal to the those who want to get a professional bachelor's degree, and it's a little bit higher than preschool education kid is getting, something for 500 euros. So you can imagine that basically the tendency is very troubling because, you know, how the state basically values, you know, our job as academics. And we want to be a part of elite, et cetera, but when, you know, you see that, you know, basically the subsidy for the student is equal to the subsidy of preschool education, so it's a little bit, you get a little bit suspicious and worried about the very fact. Another tendency, despite the fact that the Constitution guarantees free education at all levels, right now we reach the stage where at the university level education, only half of the students at the university are state-supported, state-subsidized. Half of the students, and I can give examples of this year, entrance exams to the universities, half of the students in the whole country were paying themselves for the education. It's okay that, you know, the prices are not still very high, but, I mean, still. It's a sign of expansion, and expansion at the expense, in most of the cases, at the expense of the social sciences. And we understand very well that, you know, you don't need laboratories, you don't need, you know, various, you know, very precise precision equipment, you don't need, you know, surgery rooms, et cetera, et cetera. So basically this mass expansion of education is coming at our expense, at our expense. Another tendency which was present in Lithuania from the very beginning was Americanization of system. I would say that because as a subject political science didn't exist before 1990, for natural reasons, the American education, graduates of American universities made enormous impact, and for example, if to talk about Lithuania, everybody much better knows, you know, the situation in the United States, academic situation in the United States. It's much more integrated into American system, publishes mostly in American journals, et cetera, but not in European journals. In Lithuania specifically, we know more or less what's going on in Scandinavia, a little bit what's in Germany, but France is completely unknown territory. And first reason is very simple, linguistic. So one set of the faculty, for example, at my faculty, they are graduates of, you know, all kinds of English language, of the PhD studies, you know, in English language. Let it be Great Britain, let it be, you know, United States, Canada, or even Australia. But nobody, you know, did the doctorate in Paris or Strasbourg, for the matter of sake. And every year, as an example, for example, in the faculty which has 44 positions in total, we have constantly every year three or four American Fulbrights, American professors who are working. So Americans all over. And the same situation is in all universities. Basically, we have three places where political science is taught. And naturally, the importance of English language is increasing because everybody wants to keep quality. I mean, quality is self-imposed, then quality is imposed by the government. And if you want to have quality of the scholars and of the teaching staff. So basically, they have to publish in international journals. So naturally, what do they publish? They publish in American or English language press. Myself, for example, I can give you an example. Three-fourths of my publications are in English. I'm not doing anything. I mean, basically, I don't publish in Lithuanian. I mean, I publish something, you know, when there is a kind of, you know, political discourse about, there is a political scandal about something, so I would write. But generally, you know, for pure academic purpose, I would write only in English. I don't know if this is good or bad, but basically the tendency is as such, and we're moving in the same direction, and as much as you know, even in Germany, for example, Professor Einfeld, when he was in Lithuania, we discussed this issue. You know, very much so. Even for the German language market, which is relatively big, about 100 million people, still most of the publications and the best publications are in English. So, and, this is, I wouldn't say that this is a problem, however, this is a tendency, a kind of universal tendency. Right now, a few words about political science and its diversification and disintegration. What is important in France, it's political science and law is not important for us. As Luciana correctly noted, the lawyers are staying away from us, and basically we are not interested in law. The problem is that, however, there is another aspect to this. We have very closely knitted with the sociologists, political philosophers or political theorists, and also this historian, especially political historians. And the problem is, I would say, in autonomy of political science as a discipline, because actually majority of the people, including me, for example, we would be also at the different committees. Those who are, you know, more specialized in sociology, they would be with the sociologists. Those who are, you know, from, you know, with a strong background in history studies or area studies, they would be, you know, with the historians, and those who represent political theory, they would go with the philosophy departments. So they have all, we have like kind of split identity. It's because it's, the place is small. This is also the problem, because those who publish, you know, they are needed by everybody. Everybody needs them because there are very high requirements for the committees, for the PhD committees. So naturally, all brotherly groups of scholars, they ask, you know, us to participate over there as well. And the same thing we are doing with our own committees, where we would have people from sociology departments, we would have people, you know, from history departments who would come. So this traditional amalgamation of political science, which was coming, you know, from basically from these three disciplines, apart from law, is very well seen, and it's a question, I think, of time when it could become a danger for the discipline. Because basically, it's okay that right now students are picking on the political science they want to join, and we every year, for example, in the country, we have around 500 students who are fundamentalists, in a pure sense. You know, they want to study political science. They are fundamentalists. So despite whatever is weather, despite the fashion, despite everything, they would join PhD, they would join, not PhD, I mean, but they would join political studies department, or they would start studying political science. And this sustains the discipline. However, I would think if suddenly, one day, we don't have any students who would join, you know, political science departments, I think we all would change, you know, qualification immediately. We would shift, you know, to different other departments. It's purely, you know, theoretical, but, you know, it's possible. So when we're talking, you know, as I imagine, you know, pure historians wouldn't change their identity. They are not able to do anything else, you know. But political scientists, this is a dangerous crowd, I think, because many of them, they have, you know, second degrees, etc., and especially they like history, they study history a lot, so they can, you know, change their profession very soon and very quickly. Public administration is usually, in our case at least, is part of the political science departments. It's a special trend for those who are in public service. And these people usually have, I mean, now it's at least perception, usually we don't impose very harsh requirements on them as on political scientists or specialists on international relations. And the subject of international relations is purely integrated in political science, so this is not a problem for us. So it's not a separate discipline. We are, you know, we are strongly keeping, you know, all those who are, you know, specializing in international relations in our departments, and they even don't have a, you know, a sort, you know, to go, get somewhere away. So basically, the situation is difficult on one side. On another side, it's, I think it's very interesting development generally what we're witnessing right now. And in terms of discipline, we have this famous essay by Isaiah Berlin about Hedgehog and Fox. He was writing about Tolstoy's, you know, interpretation of War and Peace, etc., etc. But it's interesting that I think in this dichotomy, I would say that political science in Lithuania is Fox. It's not Hedgehog. I mean, majority of us would like to see, you know, political science as Hedgehog. And I wish it would happen. However, you know, the tendencies are worrying. And I think all these organizational efforts, which are pursued by Susan, especially when the whole association was established, I think they... these are, you know, the first attempts, you know, to handle and to deal with the situation, and to see where it's going. So, because I was speaking too long anyway, so I would like to thank you for the attention and to pass, you know, the floor to Erki.
I'd like to begin thanking the French Political Science Association and the European Confederation of Political Science Associations for inviting me to participate in this panel. I'm not quite sure why I was invited, but maybe one of the reasons is that I have been long involved with the work of European political science organizations. I was a member of the steering committee of the European Political Science Network for, I think, 5 years, and before that I was a member of the steering committee of the Nordic Political Science Association for quite many years. Besides, my research interests deal with the history of political science and the politics of higher education. So what I try to do in my presentation is to look at the Bologna process from the perspective of the Nordic countries, and I try to take a little more broad perspective on that and also situate the situation in the Nordic countries to the broader European context. I have a few slides just to help you to follow my presentation a little better. Could you switch? Not yet. Okay, I'll continue. You all are familiar with the original six objectives of the Bologna Declaration. Readable and comparable degrees, a system based on two main cycles, a common system of credits, promotion of mobility, quality assurance, and European dimensions in teaching. Now, these six objectives in themselves didn't change much in the higher education systems of the Nordic countries, mainly because many of these objectives were already taken up in Scandinavian countries. In Denmark and in Finland, we changed into the two main cycle system already in the early 1990s. We used a common system of credits, which was based on the workload of students. Now, all the four Nordic countries, Denmark, Finland, Norway, and Sweden, have streamlined their systems according to the ECTS system. As many other European countries, well, most European countries, Nordic countries took, also were partners in the Erasmus program of mobility. And we also started to use quality assurance mechanisms in the Nordic countries already in the 1990s, following the British model. Readable and comparable degrees and European dimensions in teaching have been a little hazy, and at the beginning, I think most people didn't know what they really meant. Of course, that's a general problem in the Bologna Declaration, that all the objectives are interpreted in different ways in different countries. So we don't actually have one Bologna process. I think we have 47 different Bologna processes at the moment. And different people have different ideas what these objectives are. And that can be seen if we look at the present state of the Bologna process. And if you read the last communique of the Bologna Ministerial Conference, which was held in Leuven, Louvain-la-Neuve, in 2009, it lists as current action lines of the Bologna process the following ones. This qualification framework, national qualification framework, should be specified in each country. That's now actually become qualification frameworks has become very much readable and comparable decrees. So you should have these national qualification frameworks at all the three cycles of the system. Then joint decrees actually is very much nowadays European dimensions in teaching. You should have different joint decrees. What is interesting is that there are very kind of administrative, practical objectives which have creeped in, recognition of prior learning. Universities should recognize the prior learning of students. Social dimensions. Universities should take care of that their student body in a way reflects the diversity of different groups in society. And employability. Universities should take care of that their students are employed after their degrees. And then there's lifelong learning, which is a pet of the European Commission. Plus, then also in the Louvain-la-Neuve communique says that the priorities for the coming decade are student-centered learning and the teaching mission of higher education, education, research and innovation, plus funding. And of course, funding means that universities have to get somehow more money outside the public funding. And in practice, it means cutbacks. And so you should try, because governments are not any more able to fund universities as they used to do, so universities have to try to get money from the private sector, or to raise tuition fees, or to, if the country hasn't had a tuition fee system, it should start to have one. So that is the kind of funding. And what actually the funding and the education, research and innovation means actually is that what has happened is that the Bologna process has become more and more linked to the Lisbon strategy. And now Lisbon strategy is dead. We have your EU 2020. But in principle, we have become part of the same process of changing the European higher education systems. The Bologna process is about the curriculum reform, but then at the same time we have funding reform and governance reform going on. And these come very much from the Lisbon strategy. And what that means is that there's a general tendency of pressure coming from the European Commission and from many national governments that higher education should become more practical, it should become more employment-oriented, and also it should be more interdisciplinary. There's a strong pressure for interdisciplinarity to change the old scientific disciplines. And if you think about this as a whole, I think there's what is going on, there's a kind of what I would call the silent revolution in higher education. There are a lot of different changes which we don't notice, but they are there and they are pushed forward by national governments, by the European Commissions, and, well, of course, how different universities and national systems react to these changes, it varies very much. But all in all, most of you are familiar, actually, that the status of universities has changed. There's a privatization going on in Europe. There's more pressures to move towards new management methods. Leadership is emphasized. And there's in very many European countries, there's a tendency to merge universities together or to create bigger units. All in all, that's all small departments are put together into the bigger units. And what has happened also is that the quality assurance mechanism has become kind of a new steering system of the universities. Nowadays, actually, we are in many ways guiding ourselves and censoring ourselves through the quality assurance mechanism. And so what does this mean to political science? If we look at the Nordic countries, I think many of them have adopted well the Bologna principles in themselves. As I said, we haven't changed very much. Two-cycle system, okay. We complain that you cannot educate our students well in 3 years. But we have solved the problem thinking that nobody stops his or her education in 3 years, but all our students continue to the master's level. So that's not a problem in that sense. Why we haven't so much changed the system is that actually we have adapted. If we look at the history of political science, I think the Nordic political science, the Nordic countries were countries which adopted the American disciplinary system, maybe the best in Europe after the Second World War. By American disciplinary system, I mean a system of social sciences with own separate departments which identified themselves as disciplines. That was relatively easy because we didn't have strong social scientific traditions. And on the other hand, the existing disciplines like law and history didn't oppose new social sciences. It was very easy. In fact, we were helped by lawyers, some lawyers and some historians, because they saw that social sciences could help their position in universities. Very soon in the Nordic countries, social sciences became part of the development of the welfare states. So we were helped in that sense also. And if I look at the development in other European countries, I think we were very well adopted to the American model. In the big European countries like Britain, Germany, France, and Italy, there were a lot of obstacles for that. You know the obstacles in France. I'm not going to say anything about that. But even in Britain, British political scientists or those who studied politics were very lukewarm towards the American model. It was a very silent development in Britain. Now, if we look today, European political science, I think it's very safe to say that political science as a discipline is very unevenly developed in Europe. Many units are small, there are different traditions in different countries, Hans-Dieter Klingemann edited a volume on the state of the political science in Europe in 2000. It was published in 2007. He estimated that there are, or were, around 2005, there were about 347 political science units in Europe teaching political science in some respects. Now, how many of you know those 347 political science units? Maybe we know some, but not very many. And that's because many of them are small. Many of those units are placed in France. They are placed in the law faculties. The same is the case very much in Italy, where they are a part of the faculties of political sciences, which doesn't mean political science, but law and history of ideas, etc. Now, this uneven development of political science in Europe makes us to ask, what do we should do in the present situation? Because the Bologna process in itself is a very contradictory process. There are different very many different ways it can move on. There are pressures from national governments and the Europe Commission, as I said, about changing the systems, changing the whole disciplinary system. Some of the political scientists and social scientists are helping the national governments because they think that the whole system should be changed. But the problem is that actually we can move to very many different directions. And usually this means bad for us as social scientists. If I read the science correctly, at the moment there are very many different policies which actually try to narrow the role of social sciences and political science in society. So if we don't do anything, I'm afraid that we will lose our position very quickly, at least in the current political situation in Europe. And that's why I think it's important for us all to commit us to the international cooperation. Although there are big European countries with actually relatively strong political science communities like Britain and Germany. I would say that there are only two strong political science communities in Europe. All the other are very small or they have their problems. If we don't commit us to international cooperation, we will all be dead in the near future. And that's why we need some kind of a European political science association. Well, now there is now a European political science association, but it's not what we are trying to do. And I think one way to move forward is try to actually cooperate within the European Confederation of Political Science Associations, because the other strong organization, European Consortium for Political Research, which is a very good organization, is mainly interested in the questions of research, not about teaching or not about lobbying for political science. So I think I'm very happy to be here because I think this is a very important occasion for this, and I think I'd like to stop here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Erki, and now you know why I asked you to come, because this was a very important pledge for our common cause. Maybe, as we are already coming close to 7 o'clock, we should give you the chance to ask questions. Let me just say 3-4 sentences, not to try and sum up this huge variety of experiences, of problems that have been addressed from the various regions of Europe. But let me just maybe highlight one problem or two problems which I see in particular. The one is language. Luciano Nana was very cheerful about it, and I would like to share this cheerfulness. Yes, indeed. It doesn't really matter in what language we say something, as long as we have something to say. And indeed, most of us, meanwhile, on this continent, speak English at least to an extent that we can communicate with each other sufficiently. But this is one thing, and it is already a great achievement, yes. But when we say English, becoming the lingua franca or being the lingua franca also of our discipline, does this at the same time mean that we abide by certain standards, certain contents, certain methods that are brought to us automatically with adopting that language? That is a different issue. And this is really what we should also be aware of, in my view, that it's not only a question of using the language for issues, for positions, for research questions and methods that we apply, but it is also a question whether we are autonomous, sufficiently autonomous in Europe, not just to always follow the latest fashions that come to us from America, from the United States. This is not being anti-American of any sort, but it is a pledge against simply taking it over because it comes from there and trying to just follow suit to a discipline which is, yes, admittedly so, twice the size, in terms of people, twice the size of all European political science associations together. So they are strong, they are powerful, they have money, they have people, they have good ideas, they have super journals, yes, 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 but do we have to adopt everything? Let's choose, let's pick, and let's also be sufficiently self-confident that we as Europeans have something to offer and have own traditions that are worthwhile of being fostered and nourished and kept up. So adopting the language is one thing. Adopting everything that comes from abroad is a different question, and we have to distinguish between these two. The second point I would like to address very, very briefly is, let me just finish off that point by saying this is certainly something which is more of an issue, or the language is more under pressure in the small countries, but for you, or for instance, Scandinavian countries, it has been a kind of automatic development just because of practical reasons that you teach your children already English at a much earlier stage, etc., whereas the two big countries, the two big other languages, or three or four if we take Italian and Spanish as well, for them it is a different matter and a different issue. Sharunas, just to correct that a little, we have very good German language journals where many Germans still publish solely or primarily. So this is, I think, a misnotion. Yeah. So, and the point that Erki was making, or the whole issue that Erki was reporting and commenting on, the Bologna process, I mean, if we really want to achieve one of the major goals, or two of the major goals of the Bologna process, that is better job chances for the graduates from political science and more mobility. And those are two very important goals of the Bologna process. Then we die, as Erki said, or we take a very active, dynamic stand towards these goals and say, okay, yes, we agree. We must train our students in a way that they can find jobs on a wider European market. Okay. But again, does this mean that we have to succumb to sheer economization of our discipline? Does this mean we have to teach only those things that are useful or bring money? I would say no. And I would say let's be strong enough and self-confident enough and dynamic enough to also think about those issues and those topics in our discipline that don't pay off immediately in cash. But let's not lose out of sight that we also owe the next generation of our graduates that they can do something with what they learn with us. But for that, and that is how I would like to try and close the cycle here, or the circle, for that we need to know, for instance, what do we teach? We need to know where do our graduates go? What can a Bachelor of Political Science do with his bachelor degree in Europe? And we know hardly anything about that. We have only very impressionistic, very subjective views on that. There are some studies, but we need to know more about that. And we also, I think, have to address the question in a much more active way, what do we really understand by political science? Because this will lead us to a common canon, to a common curriculum, which will help us in fulfilling these goals in a way that where we can be responsible for our students and take responsibility for our discipline and keep it up in its wide, intellectually interesting and challenging variety.
Mais maintenant, on peut peut-être prendre quelques questions dans le quart d'heure qui nous reste. Est-ce que quelqu'un va oser dans cette impressionnante... Yves, je vois que tu as une envie. Ask your question.
Yes, this one, all right. Now, I just said that we have no time for a discussion, so it would be I would be cheating if I would ask my own question. I would be the only one to ask a question.
Try it anyway.
No, it's just a remark which came to my mind when I heard Erki saying that there would be more mobility or should be more mobility if we had the European Political Science Association, for example. I guess the major obstacle to that is that Bologna philosophy is that you get your bachelor somewhere and then you get your master elsewhere and then you say that you are a graduate from wherever you got your master. So everyone wants to be a graduate from the LSE, forgetting that he comes from the EAP Strasbourg or EAP Grenoble or wherever. Now, the other way around doesn't work. If you start a bachelor at the LSE and you go to Strasbourg, you wouldn't say, I'm a graduate of Strasbourg only. You would like to... And that's an imbalance that is going to plague the whole process everywhere because, you know, there are a number of people who do not envisage migration from the higher and good universities in which they are studying to some other universities elsewhere in Europe. That's my first argument. Second argument, they would do that provided that the teaching is in English. The Italian are very good at that. They inaugurated quite a number of programs, including in Catania, I can imagine, very far from the center of the Italian community of intellectuals. And when people come from all over Italia, and the Italian there are taught by other Italian in English. Apparently it works, because I guess they may trade off their degree in English when they go to an English-speaking university, which is much higher ranked in Europe than Catania is. So probably the consequences of looking for more mobility would be first to make people pay tuition fees everywhere to get money enough to invest in upgrading universities in order to have students exchanging more on a more balanced way. And secondly, we would have to, teach in English everywhere, at least at the master level. And so the division of labor would be that bachelors would be in national languages and masters in English. Are we ready to do that?
Okay, maybe you are right, but there are some problems with the development. I think what every university in Europe today does is to try to create its image as a worldwide university. So we will have, how many universities there are in Europe, I'm not quite sure, 4,000 or 5,000 or something like that. So we will have, in principle, 4,000 or 5,000 world-class universities if everybody succeeds in its attempts. So the image has become important. But how to create that image? And one of the things is that actually you try to create programs which are in English language, because English has become the lingua franca. So that's one of the roads to international stardom. On the other hand, of course, you should have world-class scholars, and that's much more difficult. And some countries have already moved to that direction. There are 4 Dutch universities which are having master's programs in political science. 2 of them are taught in English. So there are, in Amsterdam and in Leiden, there are no master programs in Dutch, only in English. And the Netherlands is a good example. They already changed their political science journal into an English language journal in a number of years. So there are no Dutch language political science journal in the Netherlands. Now, of course, this is a way, if you want to move up in the hierarchy of, for instance, of political science. But, of course, that brings us some programs. One of the gravest is that in that way we become more and more separated from the political context of our own countries. We don't anymore discuss politics with our own nationalities, and people become more interested in their own scientific careers. So they publish in English in the leading journals and don't actually even want to think about what's going on in their own countries. And that's a problem. And I don't know how to resist that and what to do with it. But I see the tendency which you are referring to, and I think many universities and countries are moving towards that, but I think it, at the same time it brings problems, but I don't know what to do with it.
Is there another nice little question like this one? Est-ce qu'il y a une autre petite question?
Maybe we should also briefly address what you said, Yves, about the tuition fees. This is a very hot issue. Because in Germany, we have the extra problem of being a fully developed federal state. So we have not only one system, but we have 16. And roughly one third, less than one half of those states turned to levying tuition fees. And this was accompanied by huge student upheavals. And it was accompanied by a fierce debate on the social inequality of such measures. And meanwhile, I think there are only 2 states, Felix, 2 states left, Bavaria and Baden-Württemberg, if I'm correct, that have retained these fees. All others have taken it back when the government changed or when the student protests became too heavy, because they felt that indeed it was right that tuition fees manifested social inequality. I'm not saying anything to that at the moment. I'm just giving you the picture. And I'm positive that that very similar debates would occur if we tried that, and they have occurred when they were tried in other countries. And I think this is only feasible if you establish a fair system of grants and stipends and that. And many countries are not up to that yet. And we are actually, if I perceive that correctly, and Erki also touched upon that, on a route to the opposite, and that is that we shove over the financial responsibility for tertiary education more and more to the individuals. And I think that this will be a subject of much heated debate in the future, especially with people becoming poorer in Europe in general. So this is an extra problem, adding to what Eki said. And we must also not lose out of sight that not all bachelor's or master's graduates of political science want to follow up university careers afterwards, but we must make them fit for careers in the economy or public administration or in the service sector, etc. And so this is also something which we have to keep in mind.
If nobody wants to ask a question, maybe I'll finish. I won't sum up. But what's important in this debate is that we've seen the two faces of the Bologna process. There's the nice side. It's internationalization, mobility, quality, employability, lifelong learning. And then there's the other side, power relations, inequalities, competition, money, concentration. So maybe we won't find the solutions tonight. But maybe what this conference achieved is to point out the problems, and maybe that we'll have to work together more if we want to resist, as Erki said. I want to thank you for putting your finger on these problems. Thank you to the audience to have come here, and it was a long and difficult trip. And now you deserve the cocktail dînatoire in the Parc de l'Orangerie, Pavillon Joséphine. Thank you.